Hello, hello. Welcome back to Folk Told Folk Tales. I'm Juliana, and I'm joined by no one today because Sabrina is busy, because you know how things are with life, but it's been quite some time since we've been here, so I'm trying to keep it topical with what is sort of, I guess, a bonus episode skipping thing, because usually, as you know, if you've been listening for a while, we do one Greek Week episode and then one random miscellaneous myth slash international folk told thing. Like, we've done La Llorona, we've done the Wendigo, we've done a lot of stuff. But we're going back to the Greek Week this time, even though it isn't time for that, because the Olympics just happened, in case you didn't know. So I want to cover it. And, you know, it all started with Greek mythology. That's just how it is. So I'm going to kick us off with some fun facts. No trigger warnings, because this is just a fun week, even though I am alone and feel so weird and so nervous. So, let's get into it. There are 182 out LGBTQ athletes competing this year in the 2021 Tokyo Olympics. And that's pretty cool. That's a lot of athletes that are representing the LGBTQ community. And Tokyo actually made history also as the first Asian country to host the Olympics in 1964. There are also new sports introduced this year that have never been at the Olympics. 10 points if you can guess it. One of them is skateboarding. Sport climbing. I'm going to assume that it means like climbing a wall or a mountain or something, but that's called sport climbing officially. Surfing and karate. I think karate is so cool, and I think it should always be there, as should sumo wrestling, because that is very fun to watch. Would recommend. And Tokyo is actually the first city to host the Paralympics twice. Also awesome. Very, very awesome. There are actually a few Paralympics competitors who are also LGBTQ, which is very cool. The most ever in history, I believe. And these Olympics are about sustainability. So all of the medals were made from recycled laptops and phones, and only renewable energy is being used to fuel the event. Or to have fueled, because I guess it just ended. But they were all about going green, and I think that's awesome. And also the medals look awesome. They look really futuristic and like shiny. I guess they're always shiny, but they look really cool. And actually, only Japanese residents are allowed in the stands during this Olympics because of COVID. Sorry, the mic is squeaking. I'm sorry if that was really loud. It isn't, you know, ideal that only Japanese residents can go, but at least the tickets were refunded. There were about 1 million tickets which have been sold to overseas spectators and had to be refunded because, you know, like I said, keeping everybody safe. And the athlete with the most medals, so this doesn't have to do with Tokyo, but the athlete with the most medals of all time is Michael Phelps, and he has 28 medals. That is crazy. The youngest player this year is Hen Zaza from Syria, who is playing table tennis, and she is 12, which when I was 12, I liked going to Claire's and wearing high ponytails at the very top of my head, because I thought it made me look cute. It did not. And Mary Hanna is the oldest player this year. She is 66, and she is an equestrian rider. And I think that is kind of terrifying, because I know a friend in high school who broke both of her legs when her horse got freaked out, and he rolled on his back over her. She's fine now, but it's terrifying. Love horses. I don't want to compete on them. And also, a world record was broken for women's 4x100 meters freestyle. And this was broken by four Australian swimmers. So that's pretty cool. And they swam an average of 1.9 meters per second. Like, I swim 1.9 meters per 5 minutes. I cannot swim that fast. and Karsten, I guess, Warhol from Norway broke his own world record in the men's 400 meter hurdles at 46.7 seconds, which to me doesn't seem like a real time that exists. Like, it just seems like an abstract amount of time, but that's what he did for the 400 meter hurdles. And also, a 20-year-old South Korean archer, Ahn-san, broke the record in archery this year, which is really, really cool. I love archery. I used to do it for fun. There are, like, archery places around, which you don't really hear about. You gotta go looking for them. But it is so hard on your hands, especially if you have tiny baby hands like I do. Like, you can't pull it back hard enough, and when you do, like, I kept, like, shooting myself in the hand, basically. Like, it really hurt. I didn't shoot myself in the hand, but, like, it really, really hurt. Sabrina's not here to tell me to stop talking, so I'm just gonna have to tell myself to stop talking and move on to the Greek mythology of it all. So it's said to have begun sometime between 776 BCE and 395 CE, and was named the Olympics after either Olympia, Greece, which is a real place, obviously, or the Greeks' home in Mount Olympus. Kind of chicken and egg situation, which came first, Olympia, Greece, or Mount Olympus. Not really known, but it's named after either of those. And the Modern Day Games Committee, also known as the International Olympic Committee, was actually formed by French educator Baron Pierre de Coubertin in 1894, with the games beginning in 1896 in Athens, Greece. So it did begin in Greece, but the, you know, the first one that is outside of Greek history kind of started in the late 1800s. I did not realize it was that new. I know that sounds silly, but I thought that the Olympics had been going on for a long time. I guess this is relatively a long time, but you know what I mean. But before that, there was a hero. A hero that had to complete 12 labors. Yes, that hero is Heracles or Hercules, depending on which author you're reading, Homer or Hesiod or, you know, one of those guys. But they all agree that it has to do with Hercules. However, some authors believe that the games are Zeus's doing, and that it wasn't just his idea, it was in honor of him. There was a statue of Zeus that the Olympians would make sacrifices and offer gifts to. Before the beginning of the tournament, athletes would also make an oath to Zeus. So this was kind of like a festival with competitions in Zeus's honor. And since this time period was one of warfare and feuds, the games would entail a sort of truce. In this, athletes could travel around the Mediterranean without fear of harm. So it was kind of like nowadays we have countries that aren't on the best term competing with one another. And it's kind of like a unification of nations that may not have the same ideologies or the same values or political alignment. And they all come together to sort of compete in a friendly way. That's what it was back then too. And you know, that's nice. I think that's awesome. But what was going on? Like, what sports did they do back then? And the most popular, I was not expecting this, was chariot racing. So if you've ever seen Ben-Hur, that's like what I'm picturing. It's Ben-Hur, the remake, because I did not watch the original. I'm sorry. But crashes were super common, as about like 40 or so chariots would race in one space. And if you're imagining like the Colosseum, like, yeah, it's massive, but 40 chariots, that's too many. And it was actually first described in Homer's The Iliad. That's where you'll hear chariot racing. The arenas for this race were called hippodromes. For wealthy contestants, they would hire a charioteer to race in their place. That's kind of like, this is a super southern thing to say, but it's kind of like NASCAR. Like, you can sponsor a NASCAR vehicle, but you're not going to get in it yourself. Like, you want Dale Earnhardt Jr. I feel so Southern saying this. You want Dale Earnhardt Jr. racing for you. You don't want to get in the car yourself. That's what wealthy contestants did back then. They would also, like, place bets. It was really common to bet on people's lives, which isn't great, but that's what chariot races were back then. And once they were over, Olympians would use the same track for their horse racing. Now, if you know chariots, it's a cart pulled by horses. So having horse racing after all of this chaos of 40 chariots is not a good idea, because the dust and dirt had already been trampled on, and it made it dangerous for both the equestrian rider and the equestrian. So it's like if you had an ice hockey tournament, and then you didn't have, like, the Zamboni come through and clear the ice and make it smooth and stuff. You just had, like, an ice skating contest afterward. It would make no sense because there would be grooves everywhere. It would be really difficult. That's basically what they did. And so a lot of people fell off their horses back then. But there were also more hand-to-hand events. There was boxing, wrestling, and pancration. That is correct. I did not just stutter. Pancration translates to all fours, and it is a combo of wrestling, boxing, and free-for-all that allowed everything except for biting, gouging, and attacking of genitals. So, it's pretty much like in anything goes. Like, you can, like, slap somebody if you want. You just can't really go for, like, the eyes, or can't bite them. You also can't go for the crotch. But, trainers at these matches would have forked sticks that they would use to keep players apart if things got out of hand. So it's kind of like backup. Like, they would just get in between them. No gouging. And the UFC rules still stand. No biting and no eye gouging. And that is on the official rules. But it is kind of like UFC. Like, honestly, minus the chairs that people hit each other with in UFC. Like, that's literally what it is. But boxing back then wasn't like now, where we have bouts. And this is for boxing. This isn't for the pancration. But instead, for boxing, the players would keep going until someone gave up. And their only protection was strips of leather that were wrapped around the Olympians' hands. Later on, when boxing gloves were created, Roman participants were said to have put lead and iron in them to make them more destructive and painful. So, like, not only are they not using these gloves like they need to be, it's full of lead and iron because they really want to kill somebody. And, you know, other than chariot racing, the most prestigious event was running. And this is one that I honestly, every time I think of Greek mythology, this is the one that I think of, because of the many, many historical artifacts that depict this. But, you know, they held the 600 Olympic foot race, which is about 192.28 meters. I can't really picture that. I know it's some distance, but it's not like a marathon. It is definitely more of a quick race, and it's something that was over very quickly, but it was the most cheered for sport other than chariot racing. And there was also the long jump. But Olympians wouldn't just, you know, hop along. They would use halteres, stone or lead objects. So they would swing them around to help them increase their trajectory. I'm not sure how these halteres were used, like if it gave them momentum, if they let go and kind of like flung themselves like a slingshot or something. But it was said that they used to like hold onto those and then do the long jump. Maybe I think it was some sort of theory of, like, you will be able to jump higher if you get rid of this weight that you're holding on to, because, you know, like a seesaw, you put weight on one side, the other side goes up. I'm not a physics major. I don't know what I'm talking about, but they would use these stone or lead objects. And then there was the pentathlon. This was made up of five, so pent events. And these included the discus, jumping, javelin, running, and wrestling. Those who won larger events had statues of themselves made and put in Zeus's sanctuary. Winners also got crowns of wild olive or leaves. And you all often see the see these headdresses or these crowns adorning people, sort of like laurels. Those are really common back then. But, you know, the big ones, the ones who won the bigger events, would have a statue made of them. And I think it's sad that we don't have that anymore, because that would be awesome. That would be really, really cool. But those are the basics, and I kind of wanted to take us through the Greek god cameos. So, although, like I said, Heracles' 12 labors is the most commonly found reason for the Olympic Games, it is not the only origin story. So, in another story, the Olympics came through the house of Atreus. In this, Pelops won the hand of his bride, Hippodamia, by competing in a chariot race against her father, King Oenomaus of Pisa in Elis. I hate this name. Oenomaus was the son of Ares and the Pleiad Sterope. Pelops, whose shoulder Demeter once had to replace when she accidentally ate it, really weird, but yes, she accidentally ate her shoulder, Pelops is the man who won Hippodamia's hand. So Demeter, who had eaten his shoulder, conspired to win the race by replacing the king's chariot's linchpins with ones made of wax. These melted on the course, throwing the king from his chariot and killing him. So basically, it's just some good old-fashioned sabotage. And after Pelops married Hippodamia, he commemorated his victory over Oenomaus by holding the first Olympic Games. These games either kind of was a dig at the blatant murder that he committed, or I guess manslaughter, against the king, or it was a way to thank the gods for his victory because Demeter helped him. Gregory Nagy, a historian, believes that Pindar, in his first Olympian ode, denies that Pelops served his son to the gods at the feast where Demeter accidentally ate a shoulder chop. Instead, in this, Poseidon abducted Pelops' son and repaid Pelops by helping him win that chariot race. So, basically what he's saying is, it's either Demeter or it's Poseidon, but there was some god involved in killing this king to win the chariot race for Hippodamia and Pelops to be together. This is a very complicated story. It's clear that, like in many Greek myths, like this is an Aesop's fable. There's no, like, moral reason for this. Like, there's no lesson to be learned. Whatever happened, however and whoever helped Pelops sabotage the king, Pelops got what he wanted. So, you know, there's no karma here. It is what it is. But another, much simpler story is that Zeus defeated Kronos, and afterwards he held the first Olympic events to celebrate and play with his new toy, which is humanity, because he thought it would be funny. In Herodotus' histories, Apollo was the champion of the very first games. But that is, of course, if we believe that Zeus is the one who started the Olympics, because otherwise, of course, the champion would have to be Heracles, not Apollo. However, in this version, the one where Apollo wins, Apollo sauntered into the arena and challenged Hermes to the foot race and won. Then Apollo challenged Ares to boxing and won. No one knows how or why this happened, but apparently Apollo was just on a roll that year. But that's it for the Olympics, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. I didn't really watch much of it, but like I said, very excited for all of the new things, green energy, LGBTQ people, new stuff like skateboarding and surfing and karate. And yeah, I'm really excited to see what goes on in the Winter Olympics, because I love the Winter Olympics. I think that's probably my favorite. I really like just the ice skating and snowboarding. I like to see the skiing. But I hope you guys enjoyed this. Brina will be back soon, I'm sure. Like I said, things are really picking up. School year's starting, and work is picking up and everything is everything. But yeah, follow us at Folk Told Folk Tales on Instagram and Facebook and everywhere else. Bye.